I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh, can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness. From my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Well, I have to ask, what is success if you're Texas A&M? For me personally, success at Texas A&M is that Bobby Petrino and Jimbo Fisher getting a fist fight on the field at halftime. That's just what I'm looking for. That doesn't mean... That is what a Texas A&M fan is looking for. So anyway, I pose this question to you. You're a football fan. What's success for your team? Give us a call. Let us know. I would love to hear what actual real fans think success means for their teams this year. So give us a call, 855-242-7285. Again, 855-242-7285. What does success mean? We asked Sam Hartman that last hour, and he gave us, I thought, a fascinating answer, in which he did not talk about wins, he did not talk about the playoff, he didn't talk about, well, they don't win championships at Notre Dame because they don't play in a conference because they think they're too good for that. But he talked about winning over his teammates, improving his skill set, playing within himself, all these sort of, I don't know, maybe they're cliches. But he effectively said, if I do these things, we will be successful, whatever the outcome is. It's an interesting way of looking at it, too. And I think when you look at some teams around the country, there's a pretty good reason to argue that putting a win-loss figure, saying 10-2, 7-5, whatever it is sort of a pointless benchmark for success. If you're Auburn, what's success this year? Is it 7-5? Is it 8-4? Or is it looking a heck of a lot more fun, playing better offense, being more competitive in games, not getting steamrolled by any of your rivals in the first year with Hugh Freeze? Is it Hugh Freeze not tweeting at somebody that he shouldn't tweet? Maybe that's success at Auburn this year. I think you can define it a lot of different ways, and I think it's good to spend some time in late July and early August thinking about what success means to you now, before we get into the season, and you have your first like bad drive, 3 and out, and you start thinking like, nah, we got to fire this coach. We got to fire this guy. We got to bench that guy. Remember what you said success was. I'm fascinated because I think you look around the country this year, and success for a lot of teams feels a lot more ephemeral than it usually does. Again, we talked about the quarterback situation and the offense at Alabama. We talk about the turnover and losing Stetson Bennett at Georgia. What's success at USC this year? They made huge strides last year from where they were. I don't know if that was a good team, though, last year. They just had a couple of real good players on offense and played the Pac-12. The success getting to the Pac-12 championship game and getting kicked by Utah again? That's success at USC? What's success at Ohio State this year? That's a fascinating question, where they're turning over a quarterback again. Ryan Day has been incredibly successful by a generic metric of success, and yet there's a lot of Ohio State fans who would love to see him kicked to the curb because he can't beat Michigan, because he ain't making the playoff and winning the game, because they haven't won a national championship. Is national championship considered success for Ohio State this year? Is beating Michigan the only standard of success at Ohio State this year? That's a good question. You know, there's a team, speaking of Ohio State, so I read this story earlier today, that a man, a student at Ohio State, caught the largest Burmese python on record in Florida. And I said to myself, Billy Napier, what are you doing? How you letting some Ohio State kid come into your state and wrestle up the world's largest 19-foot Burmese python? To me, that's failure already for Florida. They have already failed on this season because I want Billy Napier getting his offensive linemen out into the Everglades and wrestling some pythons. to me, that would be success for Florida. I don't know. What is success for Florida for you? What do you think success is? So this is what if you got some thoughts on this, give us a call. I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear who you think should be out wrestling Burmese pythons, because I don't want to hear about these guys from Ohio think they can come down into Florida and take our snakes. No, it's not how we do it in the South. Coming up next, we are going to talk to our pal Bill Connolly from ESPN, and he puts together stats. I'm a stats guy. I like digging into the numbers, but he's way smarter than I am at this. And he's very good, I think, at explaining why his stats that make no sense to me, a relatively low intelligence person, actually are meaningful to someone like him, a high intelligence person. And I'm on the fence as to how much I want to buy into SP Plus and some of his numbers. But I'm going to give you his numbers for the SEC right now. He's got Georgia number one. Despite the turnover, despite everything else, Georgia still is his number one team. Bama at 4, Tennessee at 6, LSU at 7. I don't argue with any of that. That seems reasonable. And speaking of success, LSU, what happens if they lose that first week to Florida State? What's the definition of success change for them after that? A&M, we talked about at 17. I just want to see a locker room set on fire at some point. That's all I want out of A&M. I don't care if they go 12-0 or 0-12. I just need chaos. Ole Miss at 18. Florida at 20 feels fairly high to me. 23, Mississippi State. 24, Kentucky. I think Kentucky's undervalued there. I think Kentucky's got some pieces. I'm a Devin Leary fan. 26, Auburn. 29, Arkansas. 32, Missouri. 33, South Carolina, and checking in at number 71, our pals at Vanderbilt. I remember this time last year, we're deep into talking season, and during SEC Media Days last year, Clark Lee, the venerable head coach at Vanderbilt, said he thought the Commodores would eventually be the best team in the country. Well, Bill Connolly's got them at 71, so they got a little work to do, but, you know, there's still time. What's success for Vanderbilt this year? And I will tell you this. If we get a single caller, Vanderbilt fan, call in to tell me what success is for them this year, I will buy all the producers on the show dinner because I don't believe it's going to happen. Again, give us a call. Let us know what your version of success is for your team, for your rival, for some other team that you hate. What chaos would you like to see in the Texas A&M locker room this year? 855-242-7285. Again, I'm David Hale. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show. I think success for me today on this show is that they don't just cancel all media. Like, they don't just shut down television and radio altogether because it will have reached an absolute nadir. That's my goal. That will be success for me today, is if media still exists after this show is over. I think this is an important thing to gauge. We are all very unhappy people as a society, and I think that is partly because we do not set reasonable, defined benchmarks for ourselves. We're all chasing the Instagram influencer life that seems so great. But that's not the truth. Set goals. So that's what I want to talk about. You got some ideas for goals, give us a call, let us know. I will share my goals with you. Maybe throughout the year. We do this in New Year's. I think we should do this the real New Year's, which is basically SEC Media Days. When that starts, that's the real New Year's Day. So your New Year's resolution, setting new goals for yourself, to me, this makes sense that this is the right time of year to do it. It doesn't have to be about football. It could be about how much you want to ignore your family during football season. That's a reasonable goal to set for yourself. We talked to Marcus Freeman, who said he is very much looking forward to ignoring his family for the next few months. So, what do you got for your goals? We want to hear that on the other side. And then we'll talk to Bill Connolly. Give us a call again, 855-242-7285, and we will talk to you after the break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Welcome back to the Paul Feinbaum Show. I am David Hale. If you're still with us, thank you. If you have some stuff to say, give us a call. It's 855-242-7285. We're talking about Sam Hartman's ribs. We're talking about expectations, what defines success for your teams. And we're going to talk some nerd numbers, some stats, some deep dives with our pal from ESPN, the always wonderful Bill Connolly. Bill Connolly, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I enjoy talking about ribs most of the time. I'm not really sure I want to dive into that this time around, but
so much of a sauce-related conversation, so much as a genuinely terrifying thought overall. You are not in any way related to Chris Connolly, are you? That is a fact?
I mean, I can't prove it, but no, I do not. As far as I know, I am not.
All right, so you have no general thoughts on movies. You've never worked for MTV. All of that is true. You are just Bill Connolly. You are not Chris Connolly.
That is correct. I have thoughts on movies. I mean, you want to talk about Almost Famous or, you know, High Fidelity, stuff that was on in college. I got plenty of opinions, but I don't think that's what people want to listen to us talk about right now. I could be wrong.
I think it's pretty clear from the first hour, I don't know what people want to listen to, so so it'll be fine. We can talk Almost Famous all you want. But let's talk football first, because it seems more relevant to the discussion. We got SEC Media Days coming up. I know you have got your big SEC previews. It has not come out yet, right? I have not missed this.
Right, early next week.
Early next week. Timed well with SEC Media Days. What? So you dig into the numbers in a way that I think most other people, myself included, are not smart enough for, and we trust you to tell us what we're supposed to think. But I'm looking over your preseason SP Plus rankings, and a couple of ones that jump out to me. You got A&M at 17, and I get it from a talent-on-the-field standpoint, but and I know you hear these arguments constantly, which is, defend yourself, man. How could you be this stupid? What does this mean when you see Texas A&M come up at number 17 in your rankings after what was an absolutely miserable season last year in Aggieland?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we see here is that basically outside, I think we kind of understand what the top two in the SEC West are going to be. There are always surprises, but we know who should start there in whatever order. If you're feeling daring and you want to put LSU ahead of Alabama, that's fine. But in some order, it's going to be 1-2 there. But 3 through 7, basically, you know, it's going to be decided on who wins those close games amongst each other. And last year, A&M just lost them. They were still in plenty of close games. I guess, you know, they lost that weird Florida game, got kind of out of hand. But otherwise, for the most part, they were losing 4 and 6 point games. And so if we think that the defense takes a step forward, and I think it will. It was pretty young last year, especially up front, and the talent is kind of undeniable. Plus, they have a track record on that side of the ball. If the defense improves a little bit, and then the offense the bar is pretty low, but if the offense improves as well, just a little, then suddenly you're 3, 4, 5 points better and you're winning some of the games you lost last year. So I don't think, you know, we see them in the teens there. That's not saying they're going to go 11-1 or anything, but if they win a couple more of those games and they're at 7-8 wins, they get the really hard schedule. And, you know, that's decent living at least, even if it's probably not what you're paying Jimbo Fisher for.
Yeah, I'm sort of – they really fascinate me because I don't think they were as bad as people thought last year. I mean, right. the conversation got set because of the App State game, which, you know, look, that's a bad loss, right? We talked to Marcus Freeman last hour, though. Notre Dame was pretty decent last year. They had some bad losses. Like, it happens.
Yeah.
And then things just didn't look good. And you can be bad on defense and good on offense and look like A&M, you know, come out with a 5-7 record or whatever, and people are like, yeah, they're not that bad. When you're bad on offense the way A&M was bad on offense last year, you are just downright bad. And what fascinates me, I mean, if you look at Connor Wigman's numbers by the end of the year, and he did not play a lot, but he played a little, he wasn't bad. And yeah. I think he's got talent. And what just utterly is fascinating to me about A&M, though, is you have an offensive coordinator and a head coach whose basically entire history is, I am going to make quarterbacks' lives as miserable as I can make them in hopes that they can become great players. And it's been a little while since Jimbo Fisher's had a great one. And I don't know that, like, Bobby Petrino's getting a Christmas card from Lamar Jackson for his success. So to me, this is fascinating. What defines success if you're looking at A&M? Like, what's success for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the schedule at hand, because, I mean, it is, you know, at Miami, even if Miami's not great, going there in non-conference play before you have to play in the SEC West is not amazing. And you're playing at Tennessee, at Ole Miss, at LSU, of course playing Alabama at home, but that's still Alabama. You know, that's if you can get to 8 wins after everything that happened last year, that's a really good sign. It was funny, you know, he hires Bobby Petrino, and I saw a lot of people kind of on Twitter and whatnot saying, you know, this is either going to be just the most brilliant hire or it's going to blow up in everybody's face. And to me, it was just kind of both. It's going to be a brilliant hire and then it's going to blow up in everybody's face. And we just don't know when that switch is going to get flipped.
Right. But both things could be true.
Right. I mean, Bobby Petrino still knows a lot about offense. And when that matters, it's going to go reasonably well. And once personal relationships start to matter a little more, we'll see. But no, I mean, Wigman is healthy and he's going to have, you know, he's going to have Anaya Smith. He's going to have Evan Stewart. He's going to have Moose Mohammed. You know, it won't take the most brilliant tactician in the world to move the football for Texas A&M. And I think they'll do, if not an amazing job, at least a better job than last year.
I'm just bummed if we don't see glasses wearing Jimbo Fisher on the sideline with his like Cheesecake Factory menu of a play card. I don't want to lose that. It was such a warm and pleasant part of my college football season. Well, it's funny because you look at, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, he's going to be supervising. He's still going to be watching all the plays that are called. He probably has the book out just checking everybody's work. That's what I'm hoping for.
Because that is the most likely path forward for my goal, which is to just see the two of them utterly in fisticuffs at some point. So that A&M's interesting to me because I think they might have a quarterback. Alabama and Georgia, I think, has a good one, but one we haven't seen much of. I don't know if Alabama's even got one. You've got the two of them, and reasonably so at the top, but to me, like, how much do you look at a specific position like quarterback as you're doing your evaluations and running those numbers? How much does that influence how you are putting things together?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very fair to be more, I don't know if worried is the right word. I'm not worried about Alabama, but I'm not quite as confident in them than I have in a while. And, you know, the quarterback position is more uncertain than it's been since, you know, 15 or 16. I laugh every time I say that because they won the national title in 2015 with such an uncertain quarterback situation. Life is really hard. But it has been that long since we headed into a season going, man, I don't know who the number one guy is, and I don't know if they have a number one guy. So, you know, the fact that they brought in Tyler Buchner and that he might win the job, you know, Notre Dame, yeah, obviously he was hurt last year, but he did not light the world of fire for his small sample at Notre Dame last year. And part of that sample was he played really, really well in the bowl game, but then also like threw two pick sixes. So it was a wild experience, and he might win the job. That kind of tells you a lot when you think about how guaranteed these last few quarterbacks have been with Tua and Mac Jones and Bryce Young. That's just been such a stress-free time for Alabama. Now we actually have a little bit of uncertainty at the position again, and it's jarring. It's been so long.
I mean, to your point, though, and this I was researching this earlier in the year, like when Saban's had a true like quarterback competition, when he hasn't known who his next guy was going to be, they've been pretty good. I think they got three natties out of that. And you mentioned the 15 one. I mean, if you can win one with Jacob Coker,
right,
who's to say you can't win one with Tyler Buchner? I mean, that's good. Certainly could happen. I think these things are...
I'm really curious about that because, I mean, that was, we saw the switch kind of get flipped in Tuscaloosa around 18, 19, where it really did seem to be where, Nick Saban said, wow, I guess you win with offense now. And just bang, they had the best offense in the country as opposed to the best defense. Defense hasn't been as good these last few years. It's never been bad, but it really has been a reversal. So what happens if the offense does take a step back? Does the defense just automatically fill that gap and suddenly they've got like a top two defense again? Or is there a genuine fall off to where they're, God forbid, only the fifth or sixth best team in the country? I'm more interested in Alabama this year than I have in a while, just because it's uninteresting to say, hey, yeah, they're probably one of the two best teams in the country. Nothing else really matters. Little details might matter this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, look, as much as the quarterback is, of course, going to get all of the attention in this conversation, I mean, part of the reason that this is such a fascinating conversation is that over the last couple of years, the supporting cast has not been deep, exceptional as it had been, and you mentioned the defense. All right, well, stick with us. We're going to come back on the other side of the break, and we'll talk a little bit more about success and expectations, and we'll talk maybe the other side of the SEC in the East. And, we'll be back on the other side of the break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back to the Paul Feinbaum Show. I'm filling in for Paul. I am David Hale from ESPN, and we continue to be joined by my wonderful ESPN colleague, Bill Connolly. If you know Bill at all, he is, of course, famous for his SP Plus rankings, which stand for salt and pepper, I believe. I don't know. Where did this come from?
This was like 15 years ago. The S is success rate. And the P is like a points per play kind of thing. I was just trying to imitate OPS is what I was doing, baseball measure.
I like it.
And it grew beyond what it's the initials were, but I wasn't going to change them. I hate coming up with names for stuff, so I just went with the original.
I like it. That's good. That's what ESPN is, right? We're not really. We are just ESPN. Doesn't stand for anything.
That's right. Yeah, nobody knows.
Yeah. I don't stand for anything either, just so you know. All right, I want to talk about, we talked a little bit about Bama and A&M and a little LSU in the last segment. I want to flip the script over to the SEC East. And the other team that's sort of like A&M in that mix of like, you've got them in the top 20, and I'm having some trouble wrapping my head around it, and that's Florida. Is there a reason to be enthusiastic about what Florida is building? Are they trending in the right direction? Because I know as bad as things kind of felt when they hired Billy Napier, it didn't feel like a lot of progress got made last year.
Yeah, it's funny using my SP Plus rankings. In 2021, they fired Dan Mullen after going 6-7 and ranking 33rd.
2022 with Napier, they go 6-7 and rank 34th. They were almost exactly the same team in Napier's first year. And I mean, look, that happens sometimes. There was, you know, they were breaking in a new quarterback who was apparently, everybody knew he had upside, but, you know, then he goes in the first round. So now they have to start over at quarterback again. And it does feel like it's another transition year in Gainesville. And I don't want to, you know, I think Billy Napier, what he did at Louisiana, he did a phenomenal job. And I have no reason to think long term he couldn't get stuff done. But just the way things have played out, they haven't, you know, some transfers left, I think, this year that they maybe weren't expecting. And, of course, when you have such an inconsistent sophomore quarterback like Richardson was, you don't expect to have to lose him and have to start over again. So it does feel like this is like a second first year for Napier, but they should be, I mean, they're projected where they are because, you know, they still recruit at a, you know, probably not as well as Florida fans want, but still at like a top 15 level. They still have talent on the roster and, you know, that's, we'll see. It does feel kind of weird to project them to improve after they lost Richardson and some good receivers and whatnot, but that's, I can at least tell you why they're projected that way, even if I don't believe it.
Yeah, it's interesting because we were talking before you came on about the idea of what, how you define success for different schools, and so much of where Florida's perception is, and I mean, they haven't been good. That's a fact, and that's always going to be a problem at a place like Florida. But I think it's exacerbated by things that are sort of external to the program. The first of which is that Napier got hired in the same cycle in which Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley get hired. And it was sort of like, and he was the first domino to fall. And then, you know, LSU and USC go out and get these superstars. And it's sort of like, oh, we could have done that. Why didn't we know we were supposed to be shopping at those stores? And then Tennessee has improved dramatically with a coach who came from UCF. And then your arch nemesis, your bitter rival, has won the last two national championships. Like, that's a bad time to be a Florida fan. So I want, like, I mean, in your mind, what does success look like for Florida this year? If they're 8-4 this year, is that a successful year in the regular season?
I mean, Florida fans won't think so, but yeah, I mean, I think the, you know, I was mentioning A&M's hard schedule and everything, you know, using my SP Plus rankings, Florida has the hardest schedule in the country. They play at LSU as part of their West schedule. They play at Utah. Obviously they play Georgia and Tennessee and then Florida State at the end of the year. It's crazy. Plus they have road games against teams that they'd probably be favored against at home, but might not be on the road with Kentucky, South Carolina, and Missouri. All of those games are winnable games that turn quite losable. So if they can get to, I would even set the bar at 7-5. Like, go to 7-5. That way you're assured of a winning record, even if you lose your bowl, and just kind of let that be the slate cleaner. I think that would be a solid year in Florida. I just, like you said, when Tennessee is doing better than it has in a long time, when Florida State is doing better than it has in years, and then when Georgia's winning every national title, the bar is going to be really high for Florida fans to avoid feeling really, really bad. And, you know, that might happen again this year.
Yeah, and I think to your point, like, when you're losing some transfers you weren't really expecting and kind of changing the vibe, a vibe shift, as the kids say.
Yeah.
I don't even know if the kids actually still say that. They did say it at one point. But a vibe shift kind of feels necessary there, whatever the record is. It's sort of, you got to feel like you're trending in a better direction. Well, I want to ask you about your sort of home state school there in Missouri, too, because they caught some bullets yesterday at Big 12 Media Days. I think it was Sonny Dykes talking about, like, man, you know, sometimes the grass ain't always greener in some of these conference realignments, and they throw out the name of Missouri and certainly others. I mean, not like Rutgers was great before Rutgers left, or Maryland was tearing it up before they left, but like, realignment has not been great to everybody. Missouri had a very good start in the SEC with some very, let's say, good timing in getting into the SEC.
Right.
And it has not been so easy there. I talked to a lot of folks who like Eli Drinkwitz and thinks he's doing a good job. The defense looks like it should be okay. What's a reasonable expectation at Missouri?
Yeah, it is. They couldn't have timed it any better. There was a period there where, you know, they had been to, what, two Big 12 title games in like 15 years, and then 2-3 in the SEC. SEC life was
so easy in the SEC.
And then, you know, that now those numbers have kind of changed a little bit. But no, I mean, it's funny. They were 5-5 in 2020. 6-6 in 2021 and 6-6 in 2022, not counting the bowls at least. That's
we call that the Steve Adazio special, by the way.
Well, and it's funny with Drinkwitz too, because, you know, he is an offense guy. He was a good quarterback coach. This is how he moved up the ladder and got an SEC head coaching job. His roster looks really, really solid this year. Like, it could be a lovely breakthrough, except the quarterback position. Yeah. We don't know if they have a quarterback. And that's kind of an important detail when it comes to winning a lot of football games. I will say, you know, whether it's Brady Cook, it sounded like he was injured for most of last year, whether it's Jake Garcia coming over from Miami, of you know, Sam Horn, the redshirt blue chip, if they have a quarterback, then you look at the first half of their schedule, South Dakota, Middle Tennessee, Kansas State, but it's at home, Memphis in St. Louis, and at Vanderbilt. There's a solid chance that if they get a decent quarterback play, they start 5-0 when LSU comes to town. So I think that's, if you're Missouri, you're looking at this as a potential breakthrough year, while also understanding that if you don't have the quarterback, you're probably going 6-6 again.
Well, as a fan of 80s baseball and early 2000s blogs, Sam Horn is the guy I root for, just because he was an excellent prospect for the Red Sox who never actually did anything. And so I just assume this is the same guy, much like you and Chris Connolly.
That's right.
Any reason to think that Georgia's not going to be great again?
Oh, great. Well, no, obviously. Like, I can paint a very, very specific scenario where, you know, they lose their attention span like they did a couple times last year. I mean, they almost lost at Missouri last year. And they have some sort of weird, costly loss to, I don't know, Auburn or something. And then Tennessee is as good as expected, and they lose at Tennessee, and they just barely miss out on the playoff or the SEC title game. Like, there is that is a scenario, but it's pretty much the only scenario that doesn't result in them being in the playoff. And it is going to be pretty hard. They have plenty of time to break in a new quarterback with the schedule at hand. Again, it's not their fault the schedule came together like it did. Things got weird. The OU game got canceled, all that stuff. But the reality is they have a very weak schedule that they should pretty much roll through, at least until they go to Knoxville.
I want to kind of just tangentially step outside the SEC for this one, because there's a team that you've mentioned that will have some impact on the SEC, because Florida State opens with LSU, yeah, and closes with Florida. And you've got Florida State at 11 in your SP Plus and Clemson at 12. And I'm guessing that's not enough to make any real prognostications or grand pronouncements about these teams. But are you a buyer on Florida State? You think the hype is real?
I think as long as we're talking about like top 10 hype, then yes. If we're talking about like top 2 national title hype, I do struggle, because their run defense wasn't very good last year. They were really they did kind of leak on defense sometimes. The offense hit a bad spell. If Jordan Travis gets hurt, things could get very weird very fast, and he runs enough to get hurt. So
yeah. Not the biggest dude in the world either.
Right. And so I think, you know, they don't have as much margin for error as a lot of these other teams up there do. But if Travis stays healthy, that offense is just dynamite to watch. It's so much fun. The defense should have a very good pass rush, and if they improve at all against the run, I mean, you look at their schedule. If you think of them as, you know, if you think a veteran team is more likely to start the year pretty well. They're a veteran team, and their two hardest games are probably, September 3rd and September 23rd, right? LSU and at Clemson. And so if they hit the ground running, and Clemson's still trying to figure out everything offensively and all this other stuff, if they're unbeaten after Clemson, they're probably going unbeaten. So that's kind of where you have to look at it. But it is – I don't think they are going to be unbeaten after LSU and Clemson. And obviously, again, if Travis gets hurt, then everything goes out the window.
Yeah, and I would argue there's probably not a player in the country that matters more to a contender right now than Jordan Travis and Florida State, because that, you know, not a knock on what they've got necessarily behind him, but I don't think they've got anybody ready. And that is one of those guys. And we talked a little bit about Bryce Young and what he meant to the Alabama offense last year, but like, you take Jordan Travis off the field and that's a completely different team. You put him on the field and he makes everyone around him better. The one other guy on that roster is Fabian Lovett that fascinates me, because he's defensive tackle. It should be very, very good. Missed a lot of time last year. And you mentioned the run defense was not good. It was a lot better with him on the field than without him. I think if they can stay healthy there, and they've gotten, man, I'll pose this to you too. When you have not, with your rankings, fully embraced like portal, like adding in a bunch of changes to the methodology because of the portal. Am I fair in assessing it that way?
I have made changes based on what we saw last year. And of course the bar immediately moved because I got to where I could probably do a better job of projecting what USC did last year. And then Colorado goes out and signs 50 right. transfers. So
I mean,
everything's changed again.
The whole narrative of the portal has changed so much. And one of the ways that I've seen you explain this is sort of like, well, you know, essentially aside from like, one or two obvious guys that have make a huge difference for a team. Like, it's not like the portal has completely changed teams' fortunes. You know, most teams who were something before the portal are still that something now. And Florida State, to me, is one of those huge exceptions where, like, I don't know if anybody's done the portal better than Mike Norvell has. And I don't know that, like, that program could have come out of the absolute muck that it was in without the portal. Like, it's fascinating to me, and I assume doesn't make your job any easier.
No, and that's, I mean, it is, it's fun. It's more fun in a way because I just let, you know, there are more ways to build a good roster. We don't know that there are more ways to build a national title roster because Georgia's method seems to be the dominant one at the moment, and they barely use the portal at all. But as far as building a 10-2 or 11-1 team, there are a lot of different ways to get to that now, and it makes it a lot more fun to talk about, even if, yeah, every year I go into the year knowing, well, USC, that's totally wrong. That's going to be that projection's terrible. And this year, Colorado, who the heck knows? But from a writing standpoint, it's great.
Well, I'll do you a favor here, Bill, and I'll just tell you that everything you've said is totally wrong. So you don't have to worry about the one or two specific things that are wrong. Everything's wrong. You're wrong about everything. No,
I hear that on Twitter a lot. Yeah,
yeah. You are brilliant, and we appreciate the insight. Thanks so much for hanging with us for two segments here. Good luck trying to argue those Twitter battles down the road. Hopefully, see you in person before too long.
That's right.
All right, we'll be back next. Take some of your calls. Talk more about what constitutes success. Is it maintaining all of your ribs, never having one in your fridge? We might talk about that more too. All right. We'll see you on the other side of the break here on The Paul Feinbaum Show.
You're listening to The Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome back to the Paul Feinbaum Show. I am David Hale, filling in for Paul. We don't know where Paul is. He's been gone. He may or may not come back. We will definitely be back in the next hour with AC from Bangladesh, calling all the way from Bangladesh. We appreciate the long-distance charges. We had a great conversation with Marcus Freeman and Sam Hartman from Notre Dame earlier today. We'll get back at some of that audio again. Talk about Sam Hartman's missing rib. And where it is. And we're going to continue to talk about what does success mean for some of your favorite teams? Because this time of the year is the time to sit down and figure out what's it's a pass-fail grading system. What's passing for you guys? What's passing for your favorite team? We'll talk about that, too, on the other side of the hour. And take more of your calls, 855-242-7285. Give us a call right here on the Paul Feinbaum Show.